Hour 3 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker. And now up on TSN 2, Brian Hayes and Dave Festruck of the Star, the O-Dog off doing panel work. Leafs sends tonight on TSN 4, and Noodles in Ottawa calling the game on TSN 5. So everything covered. We're looking forward to it. Night 2, the Leafs didn't have a great start, but they got the win. Jack Campbell had himself a really quality night. William Nylander really performed well last night. Like, he carried over what he had cooking during those seven-game series against Montreal, and I thought it was needed. Marner was fine, but he didn't bring a lot to the table. Tavares had a couple of chances, you know, in close, but he didn't break through at any point. And without Matthews, you know, one of them's got to step up and drive this team, because Matthews has been a quick starter throughout his career, especially on opening night.
Yeah.
And Nylander really took over for him last night. I thought he had a great night, great game, and that's what was needed. We'll see if he can carry it over to tonight throughout the rest of the season.
Well, exactly. Like, there was two things they needed last night. They needed that incredible performance from Jack Campbell in the first period when they came out a little flat and Montreal was all over him. And Campbell stood really tall and, you know, really calm and gave them what they needed. They didn't let it in. And then they needed a big goal. They needed a big play.
Yeah.
And Willie Nylander provided that, which with one of those kind of all skill goals with a little fake and tucking it top that not many guys in this league can pull off, but Willie Nylander has that in his kit.
Yep, the instincts of coming off the bench and finding opening ice, and yeah, he's got all the tools of a guy who I think can score 40 in the league.
Oh yeah.
I don't know, I'm not going to predict that he will.
Well, he hasn't had the consistency.
It has not been consistent. Yeah, no. To score 40, you can't go on coolers where you kind of disappear into the game for 8-10 game stretches.
Right.
You know, or you got to have breaks. But you got to be intense every night. You got to be on it every night. You got to knock in a bunch of goals around the net as well, right? Like, which is what he has done throughout his career. He doesn't get enough credit for that, but he does
score. He's
not afraid.
He's not afraid.
He's not afraid at all. He'll go in front of the net.
He's a big body.
Yep, for sure. He looks bigger to me. Like, he looks really like Nylander looks like he's grown into his body. He's an older guy. He's mid 20s now. He looks like he's in great shape. And
well, yeah, because the baby face, the baby face, and the beautiful hair, they sometimes, you know, distract you, I guess, from the fact that he's built like a horse. Like, he's always been one of the best physical specimens on that team in terms of just like the heft of his lower half, and his ability to hold his ground is undeniable. His strength on his stick is undeniable. But you're right. Like, what was also undeniable, Hayes, is that there have been moments in his career where, you know, coaches pull their hair out watching him go on one of those coolers where he's, you know, basically invisible for a couple of weeks, and you're just wondering why. And maybe, you know, like, after the playoff he had where he was a team leader, and after showing up on opening night, you know, you cross your fingers if you're Sheldon Keefe and the coaching staff that maybe he's matured and maybe he's changed his outlook and maybe he's going to be more of a pro than he has in the past on a 82-game basis, night after night after night.
Yeah, well, and Nylander didn't come up enough, maybe appropriately so, when we talked about the veterans holding the hands of the younger guys and teaching them, right?
Yeah.
Like with Marlowe, it was always Matthews and Marner. Because we saw the pictures and Marlowe's wife would tweet about it, and it was just assumed that he was only there mentoring those two. And that it probably wasn't true.
Willie wasn't invited, though. I don't know.
Exactly. Like, maybe Nylander wasn't invited, or maybe he didn't want to go, but Nylander was still there, and Thornton, and these other, and this idea that the room is being turned over exclusively to Matthews and Marner, and it's not the truth. You know, like Tavares clearly playing a role in that, Riley playing a role, Muzzin, et cetera. But Nylander's a day one guy as well, right? He got here even technically before Marner and Matthews.
Yep.
So he is a legit seasoned veteran here in Toronto with the Maple Leafs. And it's all that he knows. And that room is his room. And I thought he played great last night. We'll see if he carries it over to tonight. I expect more from Marner and Tavares tonight. I'm intrigued by Peter Mrazek, what he can bring. So we'll get to that a little bit later in the hour. But last night down at BMO Field, an electric crowd. Big 3 points for Canada. They've played 6 matches. They're still undefeated. 2 wins, 4 draws, and they're right there in third behind Mexico and the Americans. And the Alphonso Davies goal last night, the play that preceded the goal, was truly phenomenal. And it was a moment that is unlike any other that I can think of on the men's side in my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I know they were in the World Cup in 86. I can't remember that as a kid. But
Didn't score a goal.
Exactly. And last night, you know what they're trying to do. You know where they're going with this young team and the way that they play. And John Herdman, the style that he's trying to provide. And Davies is going to drive it. And, you know, I was thinking about how the world would have paid attention to that last night. And that is so unique when it comes to Canadian soccer. It's just something that we are not – it feels like we've been outsiders my whole life in terms of the most popular sport around the world, and we're just always looking in to the glass house. Like, how can we get in there? And it feels like clearly punching a ticket, a legitimate ticket, before 2026, where it might get punched because we're hosting or co-hosting in 2026. A legitimate punching of a ticket, and a guy like Davies, to say nothing of Jonathan David, Tayshaun Buchanan, and others who have made a name for themselves internationally and specifically in Europe. But that was a moment last night where it was like, as a Canadian fan, you can be like, the world was paying attention to that.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The world was focused on BMO and what Davies performed like last night and what Canada did to Panama and what they've done through six matches. And they put themselves in a very, very advantageous position here, keeping pace with the Americans and Mexico, as opposed to just holding on for dear life or even just trying to hold on to that fourth seed so you move on to the next round and maybe perform well and move on from there. They're showing up with the big boys. And to chat about it, we're joined now by a man who's very familiar with international football, playing with the Irish, and he's a TSN soccer analyst. We had him on a lot during the Euros. He's always great to have on. Here is Kevin Kilbane. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm very good. How's things?
Oh, we're excited, as you can imagine, considering what the Canadian side managed to do last night, what they've done through six matches here trying to qualify for 2022. Is that a safe way of approaching this topic moving forward, with a number of games still to go, that it's safe to say Canada should have their eye on Mexico and the States, as opposed to just having their eye on every side that is behind them right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you kind of know how it works. I was just listening to the back end of what you were saying there as well, and it's so refreshing, so nice to hear, you know, Canadians talking so well of the team. That's the thing that hasn't been there for such a long time. Obviously, I'm very new to the country here in Canada, and I've probably come at the right time, actually, from a soccer perspective, because of what's been happening over the last couple of years. But I absolutely totally agree with what you said there, that Canada have to, I mean, realistically, if you look at how they performed at the Azteca during the last window, and if you look at how they performed against the US during the previous window, they are absolutely on a par with those two sides now. I know the world ranking is outside the top 50, the FIFA ranking is outside the top 50, but they are probably, after that result last night, approaching, if not already, in the top 50 rankings going forward. And they're, as I said, I know that the US are a top 10 side and the Mexicans are a top 10 side, but Canadians are absolutely on a par with those two sides. So, yes, they have to look up rather than look down. And that's easier said than done, and I'm sure that's what John Herdman will be saying going forward. But sometimes you have to look over your shoulder and reflect on what those other sides around you are actually doing. But if you're looking at the actual squad itself and the group of players that John Herdman has there now with the Canadian side, they're absolutely as good as the US and as good as Mexico. So there's no reason why a top two, rather than actually trying to squeeze and look to try and finish third or even hit that playoff spot in a fourth position, try and get a second or a top spot within this qualification group.
So as good as this team is, Kevin, I mean, how good is Alphonso Davies? Because we're all going to remember that goal last night. That's one of the great athletic feats I've ever witnessed live, you know, to see him make that 80-yard dash, to, you know, the speed, and then the obviously the skill to stop on a dime and deposit the ball into the corner as he did. I mean, you know, what does that say about this 20-year-old phenom that is by far already the best player Canada has ever produced on the global stage?
Well, it says everything about him. I saw a tweet from Stephen Caldwell today saying that there's very few players, if any, maybe other than Kylian Mbappe, who every soccer fan would know Kylian Mbappe from what he's done at PSG and with France at such a young age. There's very few players who could have done what Alphonso Davies did last night. It was world class, simply world class. We know the level that he's been playing at Bayern Munich over the last few seasons and the level of consistency in his performance that he's put in. You have to give credit to John Herdman with how he's deployed Alphonso Davies. He's played on the left-hand side in his more natural position at left-back. He's played further forward as a left-forward position, even through the middle and on the right-hand side for Canada, where he scored the goal from the right-hand side last night. So I think we may see him playing in different roles for Bayern Munich going forward, given what we saw last night and what he's produced through this window for Canada. Because I think for Canada to play him in his more natural position, playing as a left back, I think it's a waste to the team. I think defensively is probably the only weakness to his game, actually. Going forward, he's as good as anything in world soccer right now, world football. And I think maybe from just touching on what you said there about the goal last night, that goal will be remembered by every Canadian. Maybe as it could actually be like almost like a turning point as well, that everyone's going to remember that goal where they were as a soccer fan when Alphonso Davies scored that goal. Going forward, if and hopefully when Canada qualify for the 2022 World Cup, and then of course in 2026 when the World Cup comes home here.
We're chatting with Kevin Kilbane, former Irish footballer and TSN soccer analyst. Again, Canada getting past Panama 4-1 last night down at BMO, and they have 2 wins, 4 draws, currently in third in terms of pursuit of the 2022 World Cup. Only the Americans and Mexico ahead of them currently. In terms of John Herdman, and he is someone that the Canadian soccer fan is familiar with because of what he did with the women's program, and he's been on the men's side and running their program for a while now. He's a guy who's been on the show many times before. I think tactically he clearly is someone that brings a lot to the table. But in terms of motivation, what have you heard from John Herdman? What do you believe he brings to the table, and how is he factoring into the success?
Well, I actually knew very little of John Herdman prior to him getting the women's national job. So obviously the success that he had with the team that helped drive the team towards Olympic gold this summer has taken that forward within his coaching career, obviously onto the men's side with what he's done there now. I like what he does tactically. If I'm just actually viewing him on the pitch, I like that he doesn't necessarily say that, look, I've got a, like most coaches would say, I've got a philosophy. We're going to play 4 at the back. We're going to play 3 in midfield and 3 up front, however we go. He changes his system to suit opposition at times, or not to suit opposition, to try and beat opposition. He'll look at opposition and he'll try and work out ways to go and beat them by changing systems and personnel within that system as well. I like how he does that, actually. I mean, he's changed from a back 3 at times to a back 4. And as I said, I like that because I think he's got players within this side where he can actually interchange positions. You know, you've got the mainstays, as you mentioned, Alphonso Davies, and I heard you mention Jonathan David and Tejan Buchanan. That front 3 are probably as good as anything right now in world soccer. Jonathan David actually struggled over the course of this window, but you know that there is a lot more to come from him. Certainly technical ability, I think, will get better and better. But Buchanan's one who, it actually looks a bit of a steal now. Club Brugge taking him from New England, around about $7 million US dollars. It is a bit of a steal when you're seeing the level of performance that he's putting in. And that's down to John Herdman in many respects on what he's getting out of these players. I'm a big fan of Stefan Eustachio, who plays in the midfield, who started to really control a lot of games. And he's getting the best out of a lot of the older players, the more experienced one like Stefan Vittoria and players like this as well, who bring a lot to the table in terms of the wealth of experience and the maybe the guidance of one or two of those younger players. But by and large, that's a very, very young group of players who are playing to an extreme level right now. And as I said before, if you look at some of the sides, again, I'm a lot more familiar with playing in Europe for the whole of my career and playing in England. This team now, a lot of those players can get into a number of Premier League clubs. And obviously taking Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David aside, a lot of the players that not a lot of people will be familiar with in Europe, they could actually go into a lot of the European sides, the top leagues in Europe, and perform to the level that they've been producing with Canada. So there's a lot to be optimistic about. There really is. Whatever's gone on over the last 5-10 year period, I'm just learning about everything that's happening over here in Canada. Whatever's gone on at grassroots level, at the underage levels, it's certainly working now and it's coming into fruition because there's an exciting, I think, probably the next 10 years ahead with this group of players.
So, Kevin, when they entered this big 14-game marathon to try and qualify for the 2022 World Cup, a lot of people talked about how you can get CONCACAF'd. Like, these teams, some of these smaller countries, they'll muck it up. They'll try and get in your head. They'll rely on maybe some questionable reffing on their home pitch. But I think we might have saw a little bit of Canada turning the tables last night with Daniil Henry in the corner when the Panamanians were trying to take a corner kick and the Canadian subs were, you know, holding their space in that corner, which led to the benches clearing a little before halftime. What did you make of that little bit of gamesmanship from Daniil Henry and the rest of the Canadian subs?
I honest to God, I loved it. I enjoyed every minute of it. It was a bit of a throwback to maybe 15-20 years ago when I would have been playing a majority of my career, when that sort of thing, down the tunnel, little bits of needle that's gone on the pitch, and you know, there's clashes down the tunnel and players having words and they're taking it back onto the pitch, and there's little melees that are going on all over the pitch. I actually enjoyed that side of it. I enjoyed the physical side when I played, and this Canadian side that's playing right now, I would have loved to have been a part of that last night, watching that happen. And just going back to what you said, you know, teams like Canada have been CONCACAF in days gone by. Speaking to a few of the guys, we have Julian de Guzman that works with us on TSN, and he's told me some of the stories about going to El Salvador and Honduras and many of the sides across Central America, and how difficult it is actually to get a result. And if you looked at even Canada's last game against Jamaica, it was a very poor game to watch. If anyone watched that match, I'm sure loads did, and it was a struggle to watch at times. It has to be said, but the most important thing is don't lose those games, don't get beat. And I think that result against Jamaica, and you know, given the lack of performance and the lack of, you know, energy that was actually in that game, shows a lot more about the side than what we saw last night against Panama, where you go and blow a side away 4-1. Yes, it's great to watch, and that's exactly the type of performance and result that's going to bring people back watching more and more soccer here. But that was a real football game that you don't really want to see at times, but when you're involved in it, they're great to get a result and get something, come away from home and get a point and take it back home and get a win like that. They'll look back at that Jamaica game, I feel, and probably if and when they're going to, maybe even the Mexico game as well, actually was a huge result, but the Jamaica game especially, that it just showed a bit of character and what that team's all about. And if that's going to happen when they go to Central America, when they go back to Panama, because it will happen. It will kick off in that game. Something will happen. Something will spark the game, I'm sure, again, with a carry-on from this game last night. They're ready for it. There's enough character within that side. There's enough brute force and, you know, and strength within that side to take it on board and put the fight up to whoever they come up against. So that's what I liked about seeing the team last night, because I think there's real spirit and character that will take them very far, not just the ability.
Well, and I think this idea of getting CONCACAF, the shoe will be on the other foot in November, because they're playing Costa Rica and Mexico and Edmonton in late November. And I know you're new to the country, Kevin, but I'm sure you're familiar with the weather patterns out in Edmonton.
I am.
Yeah, like that. I mean, I don't know if you can speak from your own experience, probably not growing up in Ireland, but if you're from Costa Rica or Mexico, I don't think you're feeling Edmonton weather very often as you prepare for matches as a kid or as a teenager or into your pros. So I think it could be incredibly beneficial. It's Davey's hometown. Hopefully they're healthy. The Canadian side, those are two big matches against Mexico in particular. I think that's probably what played into it. It's a big stadium. I think they're trying to put in somewhat of a card for the World Cup bid as well. Maybe Edmonton could be an option. We've heard that before. But late November, Edmonton against Mexico and Costa Rica, how beneficial could that be for the Canadian side?
Oh, I think it would be very beneficial. I mean, on the turf, that's the only thing that worries me. I think with the talent that Canada have playing on turf, it worries me just because of the lack of experience of actually playing on it. But that's the way that it's going to be. But the weather will absolutely be beneficial. You know, I of course I played all across Europe with Ireland and qualifying for the World Cup, and we went to some intimidating places across Europe when we were in qualification. And of course when we were actually out there in Japan and Korea when we were at the World Cup. But I think if you're looking at Canada and you're seeing that, you know, it's probably going to be, you know, below zero, they're not going to enjoy coming up to play. You're looking at the game last night. The only thing I would say is that you would have liked to have seen, you know, certainly with what happened at BMO last night in Toronto with that crowd that was right behind them, you just have to urge everybody from Edmonton, get out and support the team, make it an intimidating atmosphere, make the sides that have to go up there, Mexico, and you say Costa Rica, make them be intimidated. You know, if you're getting right behind the side, make it an atmosphere that those teams don't want to play in, because they don't want to be there. Let's be honest, they're not going to like playing in the weather. Mm-hmm. Make it an intimidating atmosphere. Get out, support the team, make it a great atmosphere that the Canadians can be proud of, and make it a night to remember for Alphonso Davies going back home. Make it a night to remember for all those players playing in front of that Canadian support up there. That's the only thing that you can urge the supporters to go and do, because it should be a special night if they can get points from those two games. Because if they do that, you would have to say they'll give themselves a great chance of qualification from there.
Well, it's all looking so good, Kevin. I mean, you've got 10 points through six games. You're firmly ensconced in the third spot in a tournament where you got to come top three to get that automatic bid to Qatar next fall. But I guess the question is, like, what can go wrong? What do they need to guard against here in these final eight games? Because right now it looks like everything's coming up roses.
Yeah, complacency. Don't take anything for granted. I'm sure that will be the message from John Herdman. You know, I heard you guys talking before. Mexico 86 actually was the first World Cup I can remember. I was 9 years of age and I was mesmerised by watching Diego Maradona and I fell in love with the game. And then obviously Ireland's success at the Euros in 88, the World Cup in 1994, that, you know, helped my generation of soccer players over there come through and start to develop and have a love for the game. This could be the time now for young Canadians to really get behind the side. And it is the lesser teams, you have to say. I know that I was saying before about, you have to look up at at Mexico and the States and look at those sides and say, yeah, we're as good as them. But don't take El Salvador, don't take, you know, Costa Rica and Honduras. Don't take these sides for granted. Go and do a professional job on them. Get the result. Whatever happens, do not lose the games. Because if you do that like they did against Jamaica, as I said before, wasn't a great performance, wasn't a great game to watch, but don't lose the game. And give respect to them where respect's due, but believe in yourself that you've got the ability to go and beat them with the calibre of players that you've got. And I'm sure, again, that will be... nothing will be taken for granted. Listening to what he's saying, that will absolutely be the case. They can actually go anywhere and beat these teams.
I can't wait for it. I mean, it's a sign of the times where, you know, the Canadian men's national team has really taken over the headlines, and it's going to be a fun ride, and it helps when you win and you're putting yourself in a position to punch a ticket to the World Cup for the first time in a long time. It's always great catching up with you, Kevin. We'll do it again real soon. Thank you for this.
Great stuff. Thank you. Thanks, lads.
You got it. There he is, Kevin Kilbent, TSN soccer analyst.
Wow.
And high praise, right? High praise for the Canadian side for a guy that's been playing international football and a soccer lifer, man. That means a lot, I think, for Canadian soccer fans to hear that.
What a moment. I mean, you think about what this could mean for soccer in this country, right? It's funny. I was having a conversation last week with Richard Petty, of course, the former CEO of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, and he was talking about, you know, as much as he gets derided in this town, still gets booed in Toronto in a lot of ways, Hayes, you know, for what happened competitively with the Leafs and Raptors during his time in that seat. You know, one of his masterstrokes was seeing TFC for what it has become. Because when he told me a story, he went to New York to buy a soccer team back in 2004. And he had breakfast with Gary Bettman, commissioner of the NHL, before he was going to go meet with the commissioner of Major League Soccer. And Bettman laughed at his idea. He said, "You're going to go buy a soccer team? They should give you those for free. That's crazy. Why would you do that, Richard?" And Petty goes and buys this soccer team for the princely sum of $10 million, Hayes. You know, that's only 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. 17 years ago, buys it for $10 million. It was recently valued at $650 million, you know, by Sportico. So... and imagine what TFC will be worth if, you know, Alphonso Davies and the Canadian men's national team becomes a thing, becomes a perennial World Cup contender. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine what that will do for soccer in this country. To Kevin's point about, you know, the kids that will want to play and the boom that will come after. I mean, it's, you know, Petty side coming. I got to give him credit for that. Like, he wasn't much of a Leafs and Raptors CEO, but, man, he saw this coming.
Well, absolutely. I mean, those numbers are staggering, right? That's the kind of stuff you hear with the NFL. Someone bought a team for $30 million, and now they're worth $5 billion or whatever. What I hope can happen over time as well with BMO Field is I hope when they built it, they didn't shortchange it because, you know, when it was built, it's a beautiful stadium. It's in a great part of the city.
Oh, yeah.
It's great, you know, sight lines and the viewing experience is spectacular at BMO. But it's not as big as it could be and as big as it's going to have to be when the World Cup gets here in 2026. I think they're going to continue to expand on it. But I hope it gets to that point where there's so many famous – stadiums around the world, soccer stadiums like Wembley, like Camp Nou, like Azteca, you know, there's just so many different amazing parks that are the epicenter of a country's national team. And I think BMO Field is there right now, but I hope it just keeps growing and growing and growing and it becomes the site of the biggest matches. right, the biggest games. And when you are qualifying and you're putting together a squad like the one that they currently have, and hopefully they keep growing on it, it just becomes even more a part of the, you know, the fabric of the sport, because that's something I've always envied around the world.
Yeah.
Is this you know, every generally it's the capital, right? Mexico City or London or Glasgow or whatever. You know, it's going to be a place where you gravitate to as a fan.
Yeah.
And I can speak from my own experience. I've always loved the sport from afar. I've loved the major tournaments, the World Cup and the Euros. I don't follow it on a daily basis, soccer, just because I don't have the same passion for it historically, and I've just got other stuff on my plate as a big four sports guy in the city of Toronto, exactly, which is natural. But I am captivated by this national team.
Yeah.
I will say that, man. I genuinely circle the dates and look forward to these games. And it's been a wild ride so far, and I hope they can continue this.
I mean, you talk about, like, that was high drama last night. Like,
it was.
You know, for them to go down early, then tie it up, and then have that bench-clearing melee, I think that was a significant moment in the game when they kind of – not that maybe, you know, you make too much of the extracurriculars, but John Herdman made a point after the game that as much as he's not going to endorse, you know, what happened in that corner where the Canadian guys were being a little cheeky and not moving when clearly they probably should have ceded a little space there to the Panama player that wanted to take that corner. You know, Herdman made the point that, you know, they're not going to back down. And I think that's what Canada in the past has maybe been accused of doing, right? When these CONCACAF, these more grizzled veteran CONCACAF teams that have been to World Cups and know how to win big games and know how to sort of maybe overcome the fact that they're not as skilled as younger and faster opponents, you know, you can't back down to them, right? And I thought it was amazing that Canada had the guys to just say, we're not backing down. And and even after the melee, Hayes, you know, Danielle Henry was still standing there in a position that kind of bothered the Panama corner taker. And I thought that was kind of funny, too, that they just, after the whole thing blew over, he still went back to that spot and stood there.
You got to play the game, right?
Yeah.
You got to do the tango, man. Yeah. It's been, as you know, like that getting CONCACAF, that's a part of it, right?
And yeah.
I don't think Canadians will play the game as much because we've all heard the stories where you're down in Honduras or Panama or whatever and the alarm's going off all night.
Yeah.
People are, you know, you're getting kicked out of the hotel.
Different extremes.
It's different extremes. And I don't know or I don't think that's going to happen up here, but I love that they're going to Edmonton in November.
That's a good move.
I think it's a great move. You play Mexico and Costa Rica in Edmonton in late November. It probably will be snowing or close to it. And it might be around freezing. And they're playing.
Yeah,
right?
I'm with Kevin, though. The one thing that bothers you is, like, if it's a frozen day and that turf gets hard,
that,
like, it won't
be
a soccer
moving
game. It'll be like a Super Bowl on that pitch. And it's not going to favor the more skilled team, right? It's not going to favor Alphonso Davies. It's going to favor a team that wants to muck it up, which is going to be those teams that are looking up at Canada in the
Costa
stands.
Rica, not Mexico necessarily, though.
Well, not Mexico. No, Mexico's very skilled. They're obviously the best team in this thing by a lot of measures, including, you know, FIFA
ranking.
So, and they've been to the World Cup on a regular basis. So, for sure, Mexico's a different story. But, yeah, that's the one thing you worry about with Edmonton. But I do think, to have you know, Alphonso Davies play in his hometown for a couple of key matches is not gonna hurt.
No,
the cause.
It should.
Edmonton shows up, right? Like, they show up for events.
They do, and exactly. There'll be 50-50s going off, and they'll be going crazy at Commonwealth.
Yeah.
Pierre LeBrun, our hockey insider, coming up on the Brady Tkachuk contract. He has signed. He won't play tonight. The Leafs in action again tonight in Ottawa on TSN 4. Start teeing that up as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.
All right.
Pierre LeBrun, our TSN hockey insider, will join us in a moment. Leafs back in action tonight. And they're in Ottawa. You can watch the game on TSN 4. Brady Tkachuk has a new deal, but he will not be playing tonight. 7 years at $8.2 million per, which is an expensive deal.
Yeah.
Like, that's a pretty good deal for Tkachuk. I love him as a player. But that's a big chunk of change. That's a market deal. So we're in Ottawa. We're not that good. We need him. He knows it. And
the cap's not a concern.
Exactly.
You know, we're not hitting it. We're not hitting the cap ceiling. We're closer to the cap floor.
Right.
And when the owner, you listening to some of the comments coming out of the Pierre Dorion's press conference, when the owner steps in on Tuesday and says, get this done, you know you're probably going to overpay just a touch.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what Dorion, I guess, said, right? Like, get it done, so then you get it done. Now, to their credit, no signing bonus, which doesn't affect anyone's life.
Just the owners for paying.
Just the owners, but that's their policy.
Front.
Yeah, that's their policy. We don't give out signing bonuses, and Brady Tkachuk, he had to chew on that. So yeah. Tim Stützle, when he comes up next, he'll probably have to do the same thing. And I give him credit for that. But Kachuk's he's a very effective player. He's a guy who I think can score 30, will score 30 in the league, but hits everything in sight.
Yeah.
He aggravates everyone that's on the ice.
Yeah.
And I think the Leafs are lucky not to have him in the lineup tonight, because I think Ottawa will come up flying, home opener, fans in the building. Although I assumed that out of Tampa two nights ago. I assumed it out of the Leafs last night. It didn't happen.
Yes.
But the Leafs are going to have a better start tonight, for sure, because they didn't have a great start. But Campbell kept them in it, and they got some big production out of Pierre Engvall, William Nylander. And then I think defensively in the third, they held the fort together, which is an important element of success.
It is.
And what they have to continue to do. So 2 points in the bank if you're the Leafs. You move to Ottawa, you see what you have tonight. Here is our TSN Hockey insider, Pierre LeBrun. What do you make of this Brady Tkachuk deal, Pierre? Like, what sticks out to you about the contract and the dance that they just went through and the fact that it was concluded before opening night for them?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it was not a guarantee that this got done. And I think, in fact, even over the last 72 hours, my understanding is that when it looked like it was done, something went a little off, and then they had to, both sides had to get back at it. So it was far from a smooth ending. you know, between structure and no move clause. And I will say this, and this is probably the most underrated part of I think Brady Tkachuk being willing to go long term, because as you guys have heard and probably knew, you know, they were more focused on a shorter term deal for a while on the Newport side. But one of the key elements in cementing the deal over the past few days was Brady Tkachuk getting assurances from the Senators that, you know, they are going to spend more and spend to keep this young core together as they get older, and spend to become a team that can contend. Tells you a lot about this young man's leadership skills and the fact that he's not just thinking about his deal. I mean, let's be honest, he's getting paid no matter what happens. But he had other things on the table that mattered to him. And I thought that was really interesting, and is a reason why he'll be the captain of that team.
Yeah, they don't have a captain. Haven't had one, Pierre, since Erik Karlsson left the building. You're expecting him to be that. But I'm interested in that wrinkle because, you know, we'd heard that Tkachuk wanted a bridge deal, probably for some of the reasons you just outlined, that you know, he didn't want to be tied to a team that had no intention of spending the money required to win. He didn't want to see the next Mark Stone walk out the door or the next Erik Karlsson walk out the door. But when you say you get assurances, like, how can you trust those assurances? Because once you sign, you've signed.
Well, I mean, listen, if down the road he feels betrayed, I guess he can ask for a trade.
Yeah.
He is represented by some pretty powerful agents.
No doubt.
So, I mean, that trust cuts two ways. You can't – obviously, you're not getting assurances on paper. It doesn't work that way. But whatever he heard clearly resonated, because that was an important element of him, A, finally agreeing in the late stages here to go to 7 years. But some back and forth. I mean, the Senators ended up over $8 million, where they didn't really want to be to begin with. And of course, Tkachuk got a full no move starting, I think, in 24-25, which is rare for an Ottawa Senator, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's been a sticking point over the years in other negotiations. So this was a fascinating one on many levels, because, you know, and I think I give Pierre Dorion credit because, you know, he's negotiating with some pretty veteran guys and Dom Meehan and Craig Oster at Newport, but also with a family, in the Tkachuk family, that has been they have institutional knowledge, as I like to say, during this process. You know, Matthew Tkachuk went hard in his second contract negotiation with the Calgary Flames. The old man Keith Tkachuk went hard a bunch of times during his career, as you guys remember.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not just dealing with a 21-year-old kid who's going to get scared because opening night's around the corner. I mean, they were going to dig in, and if some of these things weren't going to happen for them, I think he's willing to sit out quite a while, like William Nylander did a few years ago. So, but again, I credit Pierre Dorion because not only was he facing those elements, which are a bit unique in terms of a family of NHL players who understand the process more than the average NHL player, but he's got he's got an owner that can be difficult to work for. And so ended up getting a deal that, listen, if you're a Senators fan today, as I tweeted, you're the winner. I mean, I think most Senators fans had resigned themselves to the fact that either they were going to accept the bridge or not see this guy for several weeks. So you could tell on social media today that Senators fans are overjoyed.
With Pierre Lebrun, TSN Hockey Insider, I don't think you can say this, the same thing for Buffalo. And even though they're on the verge of a home opener tonight, there's a lot of rumors out there. Will they sell out or not? I guess we'll find out.
Right.
But, you know, once they get this ball rolling, it's not going to be a fun ride. Buffalo's going to be awful. Everyone knows it. And the Jack Eichel story is just going to hang over it all. Is there any movement on that? Because now that Zibanejad is signed long-term with the Rangers, the belief is New York is out. So what other options are out there for Jack Eichel?
Yeah, and I checked with a Sabre source today, and I basically got the sense that it was status quo, which is not negative, because as we reported last week, things had finally started to unfreeze on that front. But teams now, because they got medical info, had started to circle back to the Sabres. So we're in the midst of that right now. I mean, that process is long. But, you know, I do think there are potential landing spots for Jack Eichel. I mean, I think the Anaheim Ducks from the beginning have always made sense to me, because whoever trades for Jack Eichel this year knows that they're not getting him for at least 4 months, if not longer, depending on his recovery. So it has to be a team that probably doesn't think, or at least a team that knows that it can live without that kind of player, not to mention the players that you're sending back in that trade. So it's not for every team to be involved in it. I think St. Louis is an under-the-radar team lurking out there. Now, again, the Blues, they want to contend this year. That might be harder for them. Calgary, I know, has done its due diligence on him. So, listen, I think that, you know, I wonder at some level about San Jose, only because depending on what ends up happening with Evander Kane, if Evander Kane's off the books in some way or another, depending on what the NHL decides, suddenly they got cap room, and then Jack Eichel's 24, and the Sharks are trying to transition into a younger team. So I kind of wonder about them. So there are definitely options out there, but it's a tricky thing. I mean, once you come to a price for Jack Eichel, and part of that price will be conditional, right? I mean, you have to have assurances from the Sabres that depending on Eichel's health when he returns from this very unique surgery, that you're protected on some of the assets you're paying. So that's number one, and the Sabres know that. I reported that last week. But number two, you know, he has to come to your team, you know, meet with your doctors, have the surgery, and then have a long recovery. So this is a prolonged process here. We're not seeing Jack Eichel on the ice in another uniform for quite a while here.
Well, speaking of the prolonged processes, Pierre, I saw your tweet, and I know you're going to speak about it on Insider Trading on TSN shortly, but the Montreal Canadiens filed a long-term injury letter to the NHL this week regarding Shea Weber, obviously their stud defenseman. The NHL seems okay with that. Now, let me ask you this. I understand he's a high-mileage guy at 36 years old, but I also just saw him play 25 minutes a night in the NHL playoffs. Is this like Kucherov 2.0, where he's going to take the whole year off, recover from whatever he's recovering from, and then be available to play and help that Montreal Canadiens team in a postseason run?
No chance.
Okay.
I mean, I think there's no chance. I don't think we're seeing Shea Weber ever play again. Wow. is my sense of it. But to your point about him playing 20 minutes a night right to the last game of the Stanley Cup final, that's why the league, the last few months, has done a deep dive and has been doing its due diligence on his health.
Yeah.
Because you know, how did he go from playing every night to not playing ever again, potentially?
Right.
So you get it. And by the way, the NHLPA has been very involved as well. But I think what they found out is what we've been hearing, is that it is nothing short of a miracle that he was playing. I mean, this guy put up with the kind of pain threshold that few players would ever do to get through those playoff games. And he is legitimately injured, and that's why the league has come down with this ruling today. But I do want to read what Bill Daly said here, because there is one word in it that gives me pause. His quote to me today was, "We are not currently challenging that Shea Weber satisfies the CBA requirements necessary to qualify for LTI." And so the word that stops me is currently.
Right.
And so my interpretation of that, and again, that is all Bill Daly wanted to say, the rest is my own interpretation, is I think that the league is going to stay on this and continue to monitor his health and check in on him and so on and so on. But again, unless I'm missing my own interpretation of things, I don't think Shea Weber's playing again. And this is a huge ruling for the Habs because, as a practical matter, when Carey Price comes back, they actually need Shea Weber's LTI space to be able to activate Carey Price,
right,
by the way.
Right.
So, because they basically spent Shea Weber's cap money this summer. They signed David Savard and made a few other moves. So I guess it would have been incredibly interesting had the league went the other way.
That's why it seems so fishy, Pierre. Not to diminish what this guy must be going through, and I'll take your word for it, but he did play 25 minutes a night right to the bitter end, no matter what he was going through. And the idea that, if he had to play in a playoff game, 6.5 months from now, doesn't seem like it's impossible, right?
I guess. From the people I've talked to and my read on it, it's highly unlikely.
Yeah.
But I guess, again...
But they wouldn't say otherwise right now, would they, Pierre? Like, they wouldn't be saying... No one would be saying, yeah, there's a chance he could come back for the playoffs right now, because that would set off alarm bells at the league, would it not?
It would, but again, like I said, I mean, Shea Weber wants to be playing. So
I understand that. No doubt.
I don't see it, I guess, is what I'm saying. This is not Kucherov. This is a lot more Brent Seabrook is what it is.
Right.
Now, Brent Seabrook's still getting paid for a lot of years, but he is beat up and done, right? I think that's what it's more so like. But I also understand why the NHL has to stay on it, because, when you don't retire, I mean, I tell you who, the team that's also monitoring this closely is the Nashville Predators, because if Shea Weber were to actually retire at some point before the end of his deal, the Predators face some pretty serious cap recapture penalty, not the Habs. The Habs happened to catch Weber when his AAV pretty much matched his salary, not to bore our listeners to death, but the Predators were getting him on a much cheaper cap at the actual money they were paying him at the start of that deal. So if he were to actually retire, they would face some cap charges, much like the Canucks faced after Roberto Luongo retired before the end of his deal. Mm-hmm. But in this case, I don't think Shea Weber's going to retire. My guess is, take care of your body and keep getting your salary until your deal is done. And then, that's that.
Yeah, which, again, is a really difficult line to draw. I mean, who's to say he can't play? It's one thing you can't right now, but in 2 years, if he's physically capable of playing, I don't know how you test for it. I don't know.
Let's hope he is. I mean, that would be amazing.
No, I know, but it doesn't seem like that's in the – I don't think the Habs would like that. In 2 years, they're probably like, no, you're done now, dude. We can't have you now when you're 38 and you haven't played in 2 years,
Right.
I don't know about that.
I think it's going to end up being a moot point. But anyway,
yeah,
that
we'll see.
That ruling from the league today is will certainly be noticed by a lot of teams, no doubt about it.
Absolutely. All right, buddy. Enjoy the games tonight. We'll do it again soon.
Right on. Okay, guys.
Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider. We'll come back and tee up the Leaf game one more time, game 5 of the NLDS as well in San Fran, and the Thursday nighter Philly at home against the Bucks. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, we got a big one tonight. Thursday nighter Bucks at Philly. I'm on the Eagles +7. I'm alone. Dave, you like the Bucks big tonight.
Wait, you're on the Eagles +7. You're sprinkled on the Eagles money line.
That's
you're
right.
All Eagles all the time,
yeah,
baby.
Fly Eagles fly tonight, man. Yeah,
whoa.
I am.
I just don't see it happening.
I know that, Els, brother. I know that.
85% of the Vegas money, Hayes, is on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
That's right,
so maybe,
man.
Yeah, you're the squares are on Tampa. The sharp Brian Hayes is on the Eagles.
Exactly. What does Vegas know that we don't, that line isn't moving substantially,
yes,
if that's the case?
Great point.
Vegas knows something, and we'll see what that, comes of tonight. You got the Giants at home against the Dodgers tonight as well.
That's going to be a good one.
That's
going to
be outstanding. Like,
can't
you
wait.
Talk about a great stadium.
Oh.
I don't think it's called AT&T anymore.
No. I don't even know what it's called. But I got to say, it's the nicest stadium of all the pro sports parks I've been in North America. Any sport. It is the nicest environment to see pro sports I've ever been in.
Yep. I'm with you on that. I absolutely had a phenomenal experience in San Fran. I went to see the Giants. I don't even remember who they played.
Doesn't matter.
It's irrelevant.
Doesn't matter.
Completely irrelevant. And it was an awesome experience. So you got that. And you got the Leafs in Ottawa tonight. Taking on the Sens, coming off a win last night. And Ottawa's home opener. You see a lot of Leaf fans on the road. It's another check mark,
oh, yeah.
right? Home building last night, Scotiabank, bunch of home fans. Tonight, it's Leaf fans on the road in Ottawa. And shout out to
Masters is there. He's tweeting. There's a lot of blue in the crowd. Yeah.
Yep. There you go. Masters hitting the road.
Yeah. Right? Love
so
it.
So everything's coming back to normal here, right? The Wolves are back in Yellowstone.
That's
what matters.
Love it.
That's what matters. All right, Dave, great seeing you, buddy. Thank you for doing this.
Happy to be here, buddy.
There's Dave Festchuk of the Toronto Star. We are out of here. We're going to be enjoying it tonight. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.